ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up!
And welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, sitting alongside
Eric Billingsley.
And the one and only Tim this week,
yeah.
Tim Mattson.
How's it feel to be the only Tim this time now?
I gotta say, it's a little weird because, you know, on the podcast we got Tim Coker. The last time I did The Odd Couple, we had another Tim Johnson in the cast. And this time I'm doing The Odd Couple, there's another Tim in the cast. So
you,
I kind of feel like everything I do, there has to be a Tim and a Vice Tim.
You guys are going to rule the world.
Maybe.
I can see it. Well, I'm
too lazy to rule the world, I got to say. The world would just fall apart.
Like, yeah, whatever you guys want, do it. Go ahead.
Don't get me wrong. I have all the evil schemes needed. I'm just way too lazy to put them into effect.
Well, you know, you could rule the world in the kind of like the royal family where you don't actually do anything. You just get all the wealth and live in the big castle.
Oh, yeah.
You think that's a possibility? I might look into that.
First step.
It works for them.
First step, find a castle.
Apparently, there's some man living high in it right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Hey, almost a good segue there. Actually, I'd say a pretty darn good segue. Let's start talking about that. All right, now you guys have seen this. I wanted to see it, but never have not got a chance to. But we're going to move on to our first topic of the show, and it's The Man in the High Castle. Well, let me first say that I love the book. Philip K. Dick wrote, the premise is that the Japanese and Germans won the war, and that's where the world stands. Now, you guys watched the movie. Now, is it a movie or a series? What's going on with that, Eric?
Well, it's a series. It's Amazon, for the last 3 years, they've been doing this thing that they call pilot season. And they will commission between 8 and 12 pilots that are extremely disparate. I mean, just if you look at the Amazon page right now and see the different types of things, there's sitcoms, there's children's animated, it's just a wide variety of stuff that they throw out there. And then they let anyone who wants to, if you have an Amazon account, to, you know, give your opinion on it, and whichever gets the best reaction and the best reviews gets a full series. I don't know how many out of the group actually go to series. It's not many. I don't know if it's one or two or three. I'm sure it's not more than that. But that's the whole premise, and they make it available. I mean, I've got an Amazon Prime account, which I really like. Amazon is actually starting to come into their own. It used to be they were just kind of like the bastard stepchild of Netflix, but they're actually starting to pull away and make themselves into their own entity or whatever and get their own personality. So I'm glad I like having both accounts. But okay, this is not something that's just for Prime. Anyone who wants to can watch these online. Just go onto the Amazon site and go to their streaming video, and you'll see a link for the pilots.
And in this case, it's The Man in the High Castle. Now, I will tell you, here's my thing. I love Philip K. Dick. I've loved everything he's ever done, and I don't know why. Some of it's corny stuff, too, by the way. I've dug deep in some of his stuff, and some of it's pretty darn corny. But, I mean, great stuff has come out of his works. I mean, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? That got us Blade Runner. Great movie. Mm-hmm. Through a Scanner Darkly. I loved the book. And then when I saw the movie, they did kind of an animated, almost a Ralph Bakshi kind of thing.
Rotoscope.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, and with Keanu, and I'm trying to think of who all. Anyway.
Riley Wiggins from Dazed and Confused.
Yeah. Or CSI. But anyway, I mean, they did a great job with that. I thought it was a novel concept, and they fairly followed the book pretty well. And that's a problem with a lot of Philip K. Dick's books, is that they don't really follow him. And really, it's a good thing, because sometimes his endings are just bizarre. But, plus, there's a lot of concepts thrown in that's kind of hard to cover. So, You told me, Eric, about this Man in the High Castle on Amazon. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I got to at least check that out because that was a fun book. Not fun as in, yo, this is like a hilarious novel. No, it's fun like in, wow, that's a great concept to think of. So it's a dark book. They made the pilot. So you and Tim actually got to watch it. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to sit back and listen to you guys tell me how great this thing was or how awful it was. We'll have to see. Or how mediocre. You guys, Eric, I guess we'll start with you. Tell us about this.
Okay, well, just to build on a little more of what you said, Philip K. Dick, the reason that no one has really made a faithful adaptation of his writing is I don't know that it's actually possible because so much of his books takes place in the main character's mind. It's a lot of them talking to themselves and working out concepts. And I mean, just as an example, even though Blade Runner was very, very different from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, a lot of the spirit of the book was still in the film. And when they first test screened it, it got ripped apart by the audience because they didn't know what was going on. Now, why so many people had such a big problem following that film, I have no idea, because the director's cut without the narration is very obvious to me.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, but apparently... Yeah,
it's not a lot of leeway to, like, make up things. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't understand how people can be mystified by it.
Apparently, their test audiences were a bunch of sixth graders.
It's possible.
But
it's possible.
Anyway, it didn't test very well. People were confused, so they brought Harrison Ford back to do this voiceover narration, which really wasn't necessary, but it kind of speaks to what I'm talking about with Philip K. Dick in general, in that there's so much internal dialogue. And I think that doesn't lend itself to being very cinematic or to movies in general. Now, that much said, this is a story by Philip K. Dick that I haven't read. And I actually feel better off going into seeing this pilot, this 1 hour pilot, having no preconceptions whatsoever.
Because now, is this a story or is this a novel? How long is it?
Actually, it's a novella. It's not, so it's okay. Like in between there.
Okay.
Yeah, most of Dick's writing seems to be novella territory. I don't know that I've ever read a full, you know, like 150 plus page book of his. I think everything I've read of his has been short stories or novellas.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, obviously, if they're going to turn this into a series, they're going to be expanding it, and there's going to be a lot of material that's not in the book by necessity if it's going to be a series. But the whole concept is that, you know, what if the Axis powers had won World War II? Now, when I say Axis powers, I haven't heard a word about Italy at this point.
No.
I don't know if we will hear anything about them as the series goes on or not.
You know, actually, I don't recall anything about Italy in the book. Mainly Germany and Japan is all I remember in the book.
Yeah, I guess Mussolini just didn't pull his weight or something. But in the book, in the story, basically the U.S. is occupied and is divided up between the Germans and the Japanese. The Japanese get the entire West Coast and the Nazis get everything else. And in between, there's a thin strip of land that, you know, basically covers the Rocky Mountain area from, you know, from the Canadian border down to the southern border. And that's known as the neutral zone. And it acts as a buffer between the two regimes or whatever. And the people who live in the buffer zone are people who have either escaped persecution from either the Japanese and or the Germans. The Japanese, and at least in the story, freely let people leave who don't want to be there, which is kind of interesting, whereas the Germans don't. But some people have escaped from Nazi territory into this. So you've got, you know, some Jews, a lot of black families, and people who just don't want to live in, you know, under the tyranny of either government, who have gone to this neutral zone. But it's kind of, you know, it's like, you know, frontier. There's no, you know, there's no industry. It's all kind of get what you can get, as you can imagine. But that's the whole premise.
This is the first point where it sort of becomes unbelievable for me. I don't buy for a second that they're going to allow a section of land where the dissidents can be. I don't buy that for one second.
I think there's ways that it could be explained, but it hasn't been explained yet. But I mean, it could be that the Japanese were not known to be quite as bloodthirsty or as persecutory, but that's not a word I just made up, as the Nazis were. So that I can see that they're like, well, we are better off without these people who aren't going to support us and don't want to be part of our society or whatever. So I can sort of see that, although they haven't really touched on that yet.
I didn't really buy into the way it was explained in the show, where it was just kind of a throwaway on the bus trip of this lady, that, you know, the exposition lady that sits down and says, you know, let me tell you where you're going. You know, that it just, it seemed really kind of half-assed, and I was like, I don't buy this.
I hope that we'll get some more later, and that's kind of where I fall on the entire episode to begin with. Is I really like what was most of what I saw, but there's a lot of unanswered questions, and a lot of whether this is a good series or a bad series is going to be dependent upon how many answers we get and how quickly we get them. Now, this is a unique situation in that, like most, if a pilot for cable or for network television, you're probably never going to see the pilot unless it gets picked up for series, in which case it becomes the first episode of the series, right?
Right.
But this is being made not to curry the favor necessarily of Amazon executives, but of the public in general. And I think that was made with that intention in mind. So I think there's a lot of shortcutting going on here and a lot of things that you might not see in a network pilot, for instance. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, like just as an example, one of the things that I didn't necessarily care for is that the kind of evil villainy of the Nazis. And I mean, yes, okay, no one believes that the Nazis were good people. Everyone knows that the Nazis were evil. That's kind of a general concept. We know that.
You don't say.
But this is 20 years after the war. And if this was the reality, I'm sure that there would still be a lot of oppression and that people would be disappearing off the streets and interrogated to death or what, or you name it. But I don't think that it would be quite as bad as it was during the war because, I mean, it was wartime. I think that there would be certain things that would settle into place 20 years after the war. But that may be quibbling, but I get this kind of snidely whiplash feeling every time I see any of the Nazis on screen, even though I really like Rufus Sewell's character. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's like Obernoff or Mufferruf or something. That's his title. But it's very long.
In the German half of the country, I thought it was really interesting, the dichotomy between the two. The German half of America did have a lot of Nazi signage and things like that around, but it essentially looked kind of like it would anyway in that time period, but just with a lot of Nazi stuff around. Whereas the Western section that you see, it looks like you've moved to Japan there. I mean, it looks like everybody has adopted the Japanese way of doing business. Their businesses are laid out like a Japanese business is. All the signage, everything is, there's no English, everything is Japanese. You know, the first thing that you see from the main character is she's in an Aikido class, and then she goes to a traditional Japanese market to buy ginseng for her mother's arthritis.
Actually, it was Chinese. She points out that they said it was Japanese, and she said, no, it's Chinese. But anyway, I get the point.
But at any rate, they are assimilating over there.
Right.
And whereas they're very resistant on the German side, so that may explain a bit of the more heavy-handed tactics being handed out on the German side.
And one of the germs of an idea that I hope that I see expanded is the difference in the way that the Japanese run their country or their side of the country, as opposed to the way the Germans run theirs, you know, rather than just making them both equally evil and following the same things. As a matter of fact, a big part of the story is coming in the fact that there's this dissension between the Germans and the Japanese. Hitler is apparently expected to die fairly soon, and they're expecting Himmler or one other person, who's like supposed to be even worse than Hitler to take his place. And if that happens, they're expecting a war in the United States between the Japanese and the Germans. So that in itself is an interesting idea.
To be honest, I think that's way more interesting than the young couple that they're hanging the series on. I'm way more interested to see what America looks like under the rule of these two countries. What happens when these two countries butt heads? How, you know, the behind the scenes dynamics play out. I really am not as invested in this girl and this guy meeting cute at a diner. I don't care.
I'm with you on that. But here's the thing. I mean, pretty much any movie or television series has to be about the characters. And the concepts are the most interesting thing here, much more interesting than what we've seen of the characters. But hopefully that'll change. Hopefully we'll see some depth in the characters and that they'll be fleshed out some more. But
hold on a second. Before you guys go any further, let me clarify a few things here. Apparently this is like super early in the book. This isn't even the first chapter yet, but this pilot episode anyway. Let me clarify a couple things. The United States lost to Germany and Japan. Okay, the neutral zone that you're talking about, that's actually the now United States. They decided that they'd go ahead and give the United States a little chunk of their own land for two reasons. First of all, it gives them another country they can rule over, but at the same time, it creates a buffer zone because there's that tension still between Japan and Germany. So that's why...
Yeah, that much I got.
That's why it's neutral. Otherwise, Germany and Japan would just go to war again and still be at war. So they kind of, as a part of the treaty, they created the U.S. capital. Now it's in Nevada, I think, is what it was.
See, that's something that could have been handled between the Nazi officials and the Japanese officials in a scene. We didn't need the exposition lady on the bus. Okay. Could have done without her, and they could have told us this in much, just like you just did, very briefly. Set the ground rules and let us go.
Yeah, they could have maybe like had a map and just say after the war, you know, and then
pick something.
Okay, so I see what they did.
Speaking of maps, did you catch, Eric, you saw, did you catch when they panned over the map?
Yes.
You see where New Berlin is?
Yes, I'm so glad you caught that.
It's like where Metropolis, Illinois is.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
New
nice.
Berlin, yeah, right where I live.
yeah. So congratulations, Eric, on your new world capital.
Now, so Hitler has not died yet in this
no,
pilot? Okay.
No.
Did they tell you what he's dying of?
Parkinson's.
Darn it.
They suspect it's Parkinson's.
In the book, it was syphilis.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's not been confirmed, so that could be it. They kept talking about how he keeps his right hand in his pocket, and one character assumes that it's Parkinson's because he never removes his right hand.
Yeah, well, I think at the time Dick wrote the book, Parkinson's wasn't really a disease, so I think he just made it against... They might try to update it. If so,
syphilis would be much more interesting.
Too. I thought, when did we discover Parkinson's? So I had to look it up. According to the internet, where all of my facts come from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was in the late 1800s.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I did not know that.
So apparently, yes, we knew about Parkinson's for a long, long time.
Okay,
before Michael J. Fox. So,
well, according to the book, it's syphilis. But I thought that added a complete twist and idea to the whole German rule. And now in the book, the guy that takes over, last name's Bormann. Is he one of the characters?
Yeah.
We may
know, but he was a Nazi officer, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
He's the one that, yeah, Nazi Party Chancellery, I think is what he was the head of that, and Martin, he assumes the leadership of Germany. So, but yeah, that's what I was bugged by that whole division is like they decided, okay, you guys can, United States, you can still be a state or you can still be a country, but you're going to be right in the middle of us.
We have met a couple of somewhat sympathetic Japanese characters. One is the guy that has class with the main girl. I can't remember the character's name. Who's got a crush on her. So it's you know, there. I think we can expect to see characters that run the gamut from sympathetic to gray area to downright evil, which we've seen plenty of already. And hopefully we'll see something to balance that out, because otherwise it does become unbelievable. I mean, it's like, okay, are you really going to believe that in all of Germany during World War II, there were no good Germans? I mean, we all know better than that. Same thing with the Japanese. So it would make me feel better to see more of that variety. But the most interesting thing, one of the most interesting things about the pilot was that there are two characters who apparently have some degree of importance in their respective countries, a German and a Japanese, who are planning something that is contrary to their government, because they know that a war is coming, and so we don't know what's going on, but it's whatever it is, it's got my interest, and it's treasonous, but they're collaborating on some plan that will undermine both of their governments and hopefully prevent a war between Japan and Germany. But we still don't know where their loyalties are, what their agenda is, or what their plan is, but it's an interesting angle that I'm hoping we see more of if the series gets picked up. And you also see that one of them gets off a plane that is a nod to German engineering during World War II. Supposedly they had all these science fiction-y type weapons and plans that they were ready to go into production that never went. This plane can make the flight from, what was it, from New York to San Francisco in 2 hours?
Yeah, it's a supersonic jet. They developed supersonic speed.
But it's got, if you see the jet, though, it's like got steam coming out of the turbines and it's...
Totally futuristic.
Yeah, or steampunk or whatever you want to call it. But it's interesting little things like that. There were other instances I remember seeing in the film of technology that wasn't available then that had suddenly popped up.
I would like to point out that we've been discussing this series for about 15 minutes now, which is about a quarter of the running time of the pilot. And we have barely mentioned the two leads.
Yeah, this is true.
I think we may have found a critical flaw in this show.
But just to bring in the two leads, let's talk about the big
twist.
Let's
talk about the two leads, yeah.
Right, the twist of it's an interesting story already, but add to the fact that both of these leads have in their possession a film canister that we saw bits and pieces of. And basically, it's newsreel. It's newsreel footage that we've all seen before of post-World War II, of like one of the shots is of the sailor in Times Square kissing his girl that the Allies won World War II. Well, they didn't in this world, yet this film exists. And apparently the Axis powers will kill anyone suspected of even having it. So where did it come from, and how did it get made?
Now, in the book, again, it might be a little bit of a spoiler here, but that film, it's actually a book in the book.
Yes.
And the Nazis have banned it, but the Japanese tolerate it. They don't, they don't go wildly publishing it, thinking it's a bestseller in the book, but they do tolerate it. They don't put people to death for owning it like the Nazis do. And so that's where some of basically the book is about hope, and if you ask me, people eventually can rebel and can overcome the evil empire and Darth Vader will lose. Oh, wait, different movie. But, same idea. So, that's kind of what the book goes to. And then again, the Japanese tolerate it, and they're kind of like, they seem to be like almost the good guys. They're the closest ally we could have.
Yeah, but it's interesting, Gil, that in the pilot, it's not the Nazis that we see kill someone over suspecting, having this thing in their possession. It's the Japanese.
Yeah.
The Japanese gun down her stepsister or her half-sister because they know that she's got this or had this in her possession.
I wonder why they're putting that twist in there.
Huh. I don't know.
I'd also like to point out once more that Eric said, let's bring in the leads and talk about the leads, and he immediately did not talk about
them. All right, talk about the leads.
I'm not trying to make like a big point out of this. I just think it's really interesting that we would spend all this time and then even specifically say, okay, now we're going to talk about the leads, and yet go back to the conspiracy theories and the film and the this and the that. I'm just saying.
Well, there really isn't much to say about them at this point.
No, I agree.
She's the plucky heroine, and he's the erstwhile young guy who idealistic and whose father was in the war. And
Yeah. I just think that they don't know which story that we're going to find the most compelling is my point in this. It's not that they are unlikable or the actors gave bad performances. I think they were perfectly fine. I thought they were actually pretty good on the whole. It's just that they're not the interesting part of this story. They're the least compelling part of this story. And it's not that they're not compelling. It's just that they are the least compelling part of it. And I feel like we're going to hang this on them. And really, I'm anxious to get away from them and get back to the part of the story that I think is fascinating. And, I just wish that I wish there was more to the rest of the story. I wish we spent more time there.
Well, I get back to the whole thing and the purpose and the circumstances in which they made this one-hour pilot. Now, you've got 1 hour to hook the audience. Now, is it easier to create believable characters that you sympathize with and want to find out who these characters are in an hour's time? Or is it going to be the more winning proposition to develop this really fascinating world and kind of take you on a guided tour through what's happening in this alternate reality? Because you've only got an hour to do it. And I think that they weighted their choices and they said, okay, let's put the characters on the back burner. Well, we have to introduce the characters because we have to follow the characters through the story. But for this 1 hour, let's concentrate on the world that they live in and not so much on the characters. I mean, that's the way.
Yeah, I agree. I do see what you're saying. And I do think they did a pretty decent job of giving us a survey of the world, you know, of an overview of it and how things are working. I thought it was pretty effective. But there is one thing I do want to bring up that I think we should put a moratorium on. This needs to stop in all film and TV, period, full stop. If you have something you're smuggling and you're urgently trying to get it somewhere, do not put it in the handbag that is open and leave it on top and think that you're hiding it. I was like, that is the weakest shit I've ever seen. Come on.
Or if you're hiding it in your like sweater or something that you're wearing, don't grasp it like it's...
But that's even better than... It's such a trope. It's like, oh, I can't let anyone find this. I'm going to put it in my bag and hide it by putting it on top and not closing the bag and carrying it around at about, you know, chest level so people can see the bag.
Exactly. If someone does see it,
it's artificial tension and it's lazy, hacky writing. It needs to stop.
Now, I have to ask, did you catch the, I mean, you had to catch this if you were paying attention because it was really blatant. Did you catch the nod to Blade Runner? Because this was actually produced by Ridley Scott and Scott's company, Scott Free, produced this pilot. So did you catch the nod to Blade Runner?
That part where, you know, he folded up this piece of paper that said, I used to make good movies.
Oh.
Whoa. Yeah, I did catch that.
Oh, what's the reference to Blade Runner?
He was this character who has nothing to do with the plot, who doesn't even have any speaking lines. And this is what I mean by obvious. It wasn't like in the background or out of the corner of the shot.
No.
It's like the camera just like focuses on this guy folding an origami unicorn the way that the one that we saw at the end of Blade Runner. And I was just like expecting that character to have some significance. And he just gets up off the seat and walks out the door. It's like,
well, Edward James Olmos is in this one too?
No gaff, but there was an origami unicorn.
Yeah, interesting. That was cute. I could have done without the extreme close-up of it.
Right,
I got it without them having to shove the camera on it, but
it should have been a little more subtle. I would have appreciated it more.
Yeah, subtlety's better done when it's subtle.
Yeah. No, I'm all for this. I would watch some more of it just to see how this all pans out. I'm with Eric on the mustache twirling. I could use a little bit less of that. A little bit less.
Rufus Sewell as that character was good casting because he just looks the part.
Yeah.
All right, you guys definitely have me intrigued. I'm going to have to watch this. Now, it sounds like they're taking a little poetic license like they usually do with Philip K. Dick novels, but you got me interested in it. I'm definitely going to make it a strong effort over the weekend to check this out. Then maybe Tim Coker will join us next week and we'll revisit this again.
Yeah, because Tim's read the book.
Now, one thing, though. Yeah, okay, cool. So it'll be two of us read the book and saw it. And so now, the thing I'm looking at here, it is a pilot. I mean, how many times have we seen pilots and then the series actually starts and there's like a complete different cast of characters, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm wondering how much of that's going to take effect if the pilot gets approved or whatever.
Well, you know, Gil, honestly, as Tim was saying, we are not that invested in these characters at that point.
Nah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They could recast the entire thing and it really wouldn't impact it that much because it really is the concept that's driving this thing. Yeah. It makes me interested.
Now, the book itself, it was basically, as long as you have art and literature, as long as you have that, you have a free nation and, you know, that type of a concept behind it. And I think it sounds like they're trying to go that way with the film canister or whatever, but they're just changing the medium. I don't know. You got me intrigued. Like I said, it sounds like a good enough storyline from the book.
I would be interested to see more, as opposed to the next thing we're going to talk about.
Oh, and now I know there are people out there that would argue with you left and right, Tim, Mattson, and you're going to, but I don't know. I want to hear your take on this, because we kind of mentioned it last week. Yeah, let's move on, since we did kind of talk longer than the actual pilot was for The Man in the High Castle. And still didn't mention the lead characters. But anyway, let's talk about, actually, again, I'm going to leave it to you guys talking because I've got all the episodes DVR'd, haven't watched them yet. I mean, there's so much stuff I want to watch that it's all, in fact, I was going to watch, I just got to tell you guys, I was going to go back and watch the original movie 12 Monkeys last night, and then I was going to start the series and I was going to do a comparison, keep them both fresh in my mind. But The Professional was on, you know, with Natalie Portman and
Luc Besson.
Jean Reno.
Yeah, and I'm like, never mind, I'm watching this.
That's a good movie.
You made the right choice.
I think so. I love that movie. Even Isaac stopped watching YouTube videos and sat down on the couch and watched it with us. So,
although it is a little creepy at times, there's this whole kind of pedophilic relationship angle. That, I mean, it's not literal, but it's it's in the subtext. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and after watching it again last night, I thought that first time when I'm going on a tangent here, but I thought that first time I watched The Professional, and I thought, and then the part where she even tells the hotel manager, you know, he's my lover, and they get kicked out of that hotel. That part, you're like, wait a minute, and then. But rest of it, it seems hard. Actually, the whole movie, it seems like he feels like he's the father all of a sudden. So I didn't get the creepy vibe watching it this time around.
I'll have to watch it again. It's been a while.
But I will say that, well, with that, even more recently, the whole Shia LaBeouf and the Sia video with that girl from Dance Moms, that's getting the same kind of shaming that The Professional got, being a pedophile in a caged area with an 11-year-old. But if you watch the video, that's not what it is. But anyway, that's beside the point. But instead, I didn't get to watch 12 Monkeys, the movie, last night because I was going to watch it before the TV series. But you guys have seen 12 Monkeys, the TV series. Talk amongst yourself. There's your topic. Let's hear it.
Go ahead. Wow. You start, Tim, since I start in on
Okay. Yeah, okay, fine. I imagine my intro to this is probably going to be way briefer than yours would be, Eric, because I would say that, Gil, you made the right choice. You know, I would say to anybody that wants to really get into this, watch the Terry Gilliam film.
Oh, yeah.
And then just stop. Go watch Leon the Professional afterwards. There's no reason for this TV show to exist. It doesn't do anything new or different or better in any way than the Terry Gilliam film. It's perfectly serviceable entertainment. Don't get me wrong. It's not terrible. It's not bad. It's just, you know, it's inessential TV. It is inessential. We already have a movie that tells you a great story within a couple hours and is intriguing, is filled with great performances, great story twists that keep you on the edge of your seats, and
not
the TV show,
twisted imagination.
Yeah, well, and it's based on a 1962 French short film too.
Yeah,
that, from what I understand, is pretty interesting. I have not watched it, but
it's very good.
But the TV show, you know, the actors are game. They are giving it their all. They are decent performers. They're good at their jobs, but it just reeks of I've been here before, and I enjoyed it better last time.
All right, hold on a second. Did you listen to last week's podcast, Tim?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
All right, well, I'm going to hit you with a concept that I've been mulling over for quite a while, ever since with Fargo TV series. The fact that, how many times have you seen a Shakespeare play, like Romeo and Juliet, how many times has that been redone? Several.
Absolutely.
The way I look at this is like, and I've seen it like, let's put them in modern day Italy with guns and, you know, instead of swords and, you know.
Sure.
And there's always some kind of new twist to it. Or I've seen umpteen performances of Midsummer Night's Dream. Let's get the full title out there. Where it's the same thing over and over. It's the same darn play. They don't change anything. Yep. They just keep it. But I enjoy watching the play because there's a good story. Now, that's the way I'm looking at it with this 12 Monkeys, and that's the way I looked at it with Fargo is, yeah, it's the same story. I've seen it before. But, you know, it's kind of neat to watch it again and with someone else doing the part. Like, I've seen Stacy Keach in Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen I'm trying to think. Who was Hamlet's father in when Mel Gibson?
Brendan Gleeson?
Yes. Thank you. And it was like two different actors bringing the same role. It's like, you know, I was happy with it. So that's the way I look at these, is that, okay, it's just another production of it. Okay, they're going to extend this one out. But
here's the thing, though, Gil. Nobody's taking a two-hour play and making seven seasons of TV out of it.
Now, with...
If they were going to take a two-hour play, a two-hour Terry Gilliam film, recast it with some new actors, bring in some new concepts, and maybe shoot it a little differently and present it to me in a new and original way, I'm all down for that. You're going to make 13 episodes of a TV show with actors that are not as good as the original actors.
No, they're not.
And shot on a much smaller budget with a much less creative team of people. I am not down for
Well, see, that's where we'll differ. Is like I'll watch a black box theater production of any Shakespeare, and yet I'll still watch Henry V,
Kenneth Branagh version.
Kenneth Branagh version. So it's like, I won't compare them because yet again they're the same play, but I'll say, yeah.
Would you go back to that black box one night every week for 20 weeks to see the show that was told in 2 hours?
That's a good point.
I mean, that's my point, Gil. I mean, if you're not comparing apples to apples, I am with you 100% on remounting theatrical productions with new casts. I'm doing that right now. I'm doing my second production of The Odd Couple with an almost entirely different cast. And I'm learning and doing entirely different things this time around than I did the last time. And that's interesting. And I think that if an audience member came to both of these shows, I still think they'd be entertained the second time around. However, I don't think that same audience member would come to see me once a week for 20 weeks to do a 40-minute version of the Odd Couple story that goes on for weeks at a time.
Well, it was a good TV series.
I don't think... Yeah, that premieres on the 19th, and I predict a quick death for that one. I don't think that's...
Oh, no, I'm talking about
the original series.
The original TV
series. No, I agree. Yeah, that's...
See, sometimes you can stretch things out. Now,
but once again, that got stretched out, too. I mean, everything goes on too long is my what it goes down to.
You're an MTV generation person, aren't you?
Everything could stand to be shorter.
Okay.
Now, I agree with a lot with what Tim's saying, but I tend to be a little more tolerant and forgiving of television in general because it's made under constraints that films are not. Now, you mentioned the Odd Couple series. Now, the Odd Couple series now has been decades since I saw an episode of the Odd Couple series, but they take the concept from the play. And they basically run with it. And every episode has its own events and things that happen that didn't happen in the play. They take the concept and they build upon it. And here's the thing with 12 Monkeys is so far they haven't built on anything. It's basically it's basically things that we have already seen in the film. But there's only been two episodes that have aired so far. The third one is tomorrow night. And I'm going to go ahead and give them a few more episodes to do that building because they may still just be establishing the universe for those who haven't seen 12 Monkeys, the movie. Now, if they don't go anywhere new with this retelling, if it's just a padded out extended version of the movie on a low budget with younger actors who don't really have half the talent of the original cast, and there's none of the artistry that you know Terry Gilliam brought, then yeah, I'm going to lose interest pretty quickly with it. But I am going to go ahead and give them a chance to build that because I would assume that's the only reason for doing this is if you have something new to bring to it. But so far in two episodes, I haven't seen that.
No. There's nothing. And I'm sorry, I do not have the luxury of that much time to indulge them. I don't. I'm sorry.
I know, I hear you.
I am 47 years old, guys. I know I am sexy and have the body of a 20-year-old, but I am, in fact, 47 years old. And I don't have the patience or the time to give these things. And the more I feel like the more we reward these lackluster, warm, leftover type of shows, the more we're going to get them. I would much more prefer to reward like a new and interesting show my time and my eyeballs for viewing. I want something new and interesting. Stop spoon feeding me stuff that I've already seen before because it's comfortable. I want to see something new.
I mean, that gets back to the big argument that I mean, it's been going on forever, or at least since Hollywood started becoming bankrupt with ideas. Stop giving us remakes and sequels. Give us some original ideas, but those
enough already.
I
don't want another Star Wars film. I don't care. I don't want it. I've seen Star Wars. I've seen some great Star Wars films. I don't want any more. I want something new.
And the thing about 12 Monkeys is I love the movie 12 Monkeys. I think next to Brazil, it may well be Terry Gilliam's next best film. And I mean, Brazil is just brilliant. I mean, Brazil is, I think, one of the greatest films ever. But it's not a perfect film, and it's not above a remake if someone has something interesting, a new spin to put on it, or a new perspective or a new way of presenting it. But as you said, if they wanted to do a remake in a two-hour film, I can sit for that more than I can for a series that's not bringing anything new to the table so far.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. For me, this is the same type of thing as the shot-for-shot remake of Psycho.
Yeah.
It's utterly pointless. I've already seen the masterpiece.
Yeah.
Why would I want to see somebody just pointing a camera at things that look like the original? I'm sorry. It's a waste of my time. And it's not worthy of my time.
Now, one thing I just want to say about the series, it's really the only thing out of two episodes that I can really point out that was kind of unexpected and I'm actually really enjoying, and that is in Brad Pitt, Jeffrey Goins, or Goins as they say in the series, from the original has been recast as a female. So the daughter of the big senator / magnate, whatever, is Jennifer Goins now instead of Jeffrey. And the actress who's playing her, I've seen her before in something, but I can't recall. But she's got this look that
she was Ally Sheedy in The Breakfast Club. I think that's what you're looking for.
Oh, my God, that's what I was going to say. It's not her, but it looks
It sure as hell looks just like her from The Breakfast Club.
Oh, my God, that's Ally Sheedy's younger sibling or younger clone or something.
But that first shot, I got to say, that reveal that it's a girl, that just smacked of the producers going, hey, oh, we're going to stick it to them. Wait till they see this. Oh, it's a girl. Psych. You thought it was going to be a guy. Woo woo. We're really bringing original ideas. Yeah. No, you're right.
They did. They put the camera, put her out of camera for as long as they possibly could.
As long as possible.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, for crying out loud, what is it going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, that's your original take on the story. It's a girl.
Okay, I got to tell you something here. I just pulled up IMDb.
You could hear the high fives from the director all the way out here.
All right.
They're still reverberating. You're like, yeah, man, we nailed it.
All right, I had to look up what you tell me. Like I said, I have not seen the series yet, but I had to look it up on IMDb. I pulled it up. The first thing, it says, people who like this also like, get this, Agent Carter, The Man Sniffing in the High Blue Castle, Helix, Backstrom. What?
Wait, what was the last one?
Backstrom, yeah. The new TV series with Rainn Wilson.
I haven't heard of it.
Oh, it's never heard of it. It's pretty good. It's like House, but he's a detective instead of a doctor. But anyway, so I was trying to find out who this woman was that you speak of.
Ally Sheedy's younger clone.
It's Ally Sheedy. They've time-traveled her from The Breakfast Club.
Jennifer Goins, Emily Hampshire. Emily Hampshire is the actress's name. So far, she's only in three episodes. What they have her listed as is three episodes.
Well,
no, they've got listed
I've noticed
nine
that they do that.
The others.
That they, I think they purposely hold back on releasing cast lists because people read those things and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, guess who's no longer in the series? They must get killed off.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I've been noticing that they've been doing that quite a bit with series on IMDb lately.
Yeah, well, looking at her resume on IMDb, I don't recognize any of those shows that she's been on, so I've never seen any of them. So she's a new one for me.
Well, I'm sorry to say, for me, she's going to remain an unknown because 12 Monkeys, it's a no-go for me.
Okay, well, I'm going to still give it a chance because I got a DVR taking up space, so I got to at least watch it a couple episodes.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
I don't know if
more.
You're aware of this, Gil, but you can actually delete episodes without watching them. letting you in on that secret, you might want to take advantage of that feature.
As a matter of fact, I just engaged that feature on American Horror Story.
Oh. There you go.
I had the last 8 episodes on my DVR, and I felt guilty about it. It's like, maybe I should give it another chance. And then I read an article which I posted on our Facebook page, mm-hmm. where they were talking about how the this season just completely went off the rails, especially towards the end. I was like, okay, that's all I needed here. Feely.
I'm a firm believer that when you do that, your DVR should make a flushing noise.
Yeah, that would be cool.
On those, I think it really should.
You should patent that idea and make $1 million.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna still give him a chance. I'm gonna see what happens, see what I think, and I always do anyway. And I usually end up going, God, why didn't I listen to you guys?
I wish I had those hours back.
But
no one has ever said that about something I've said.
But
no one.
I mean, I do that with audiobooks. I listen to audiobooks all the time, and I'll get to through the first disc, like if it's a disc, or I'll get to like the first hour, and if it's I'm just not interested at that point, I pitch the rest of it. So maybe I'll watch the first hour or two of 12 Monkeys, and we'll see what happens. I'll report back and let you guys know. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a couple episodes actually.
Yep, same here. I'll keep you guys informed until I give up on it, or unless something happens that makes it worth watching more.
Well, it looks like a very unknown cast. That's very interesting.
There's only one guy that I know in the entire cast, and I never remember his name.
Kirk Acevedo?
Yep. He was in the Planet of the Apes movie, and he was in Fringe.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about him. I meant the other guy. He's usually the evil Russian guy.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. No, he's got a Czechoslovakian name. Zelko Ivanek. I think is.
Yeah, he's always a Euro terrorist or, you know, some sort of terrorist or bad guy. He never plays the good guy ever.
Well, I'm still going to give it a shot. And, Zelko Ivanek. Oh, okay. He was also in.
He was in 24.
24. Something else. Was he in Fringe?
Yes. Okay. I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah. He plays Leland Goins. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep an eye out for him, too. Well, two people in Fringe in this, and that's got me intrigued. I loved Fringe. I wish that would have never gone away.
Yeah. I didn't love the last season so much.
No. They went off weird ways. But yeah.
I think they just kind of ran out of steam towards the end. They're like, oh, we need to wrap this up.
Either that or they said, well, crap, we're getting canceled. Might as well write something up. Like they did with Life on Mars, the TV series. The last episode was total crap.
They misused
Harvey Keitel.
They knew they had quite a number of episodes to wrap things up. They knew the season before that they were going to have
about a
half season worth of episodes. They could have come up with a better story than they did. It just really wasn't that great.
Yeah.
No, it was very canned. And I mean, we've seen all that, the invasion and the resistance. It's all been done
absolutely
to death.
It has. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, we never finished the second half of that last season. I have no idea how
it
ended.
I can't blame you.
I did, and I can't remember when it happened.
I can't get excited about it. Yeah. I'm sorry. It just... You went away from your core so far that I'm like, this isn't even the same story that you were telling
you're right.
me.
Well, let me they threw their format and everything else out the window to go with this thing that we've already seen a dozen times before, you know?
All right,
before we leave the topic of Fringe, I got to ask you guys, did you ever try to crack the code of the pictures and dots between commercial breaks?
Yeah.
I've seen that online.
I saw online that it was a code, and I tried to figure it out one time, and I'm like, forget it. That's work.
I had my internet minions figure it out for me.
There you go.
I'm a nerd, but I'm not that nerdy.
We're lazy nerds.
I'm an extremely lazy nerd. I think we've covered that before.
Yeah. I think you mentioned that,
And just, you know, I mean, you obviously cannot see me, but I will tell you, I am lounging in bed while we're podcasting. So
with that 20-year-old body,
Ladies out there, this is for you.
Mm. All right, let's move on to the next TV series. Again, I'm going to probably leave it up to you guys on the most part of it because I haven't watched quite a lot of episodes. I only watched the first two or three, and I kind of lost interest. But Constantine in the TV series, you guys watching this?
I am.
No.
So, Eric, you're alone on this one.
I have stuck with this series through thick and thin, and I'm being rewarded now. I mean, it's taken a while to really find its footing, but it's pretty much consistently most episodes, at least the last four or five that I've seen, have been generally very good. And it's bringing back that the memories of reading the comic. Now, I still say that it still has a long way to go as far as replicating the real tone of the comic, but I don't know that primetime network television is ready for that. So they're probably flirting with that about as much as they possibly can right now. The thing that's really making it interesting is they're going back and they're pulling these characters into the episodes that from Constantine's past, mostly who were all part of this faded seance or exorcism that went bad, in which Astrid. What is her?
Yeah, Astrid's from Fringe.
Yeah, well, I can't remember.
Wrong show.
Anyway, the little girl who somehow got taken to hell.
Yeah.
It all ties back to that. And all these people that were there with him conducting this exorcism, well, we've only actually seen two of them now in the series. But the episodes that they're in are interesting. And John Ryan, I think, is the actor's name that plays Constantine. He's it was such great casting. I mean, he is so good in this role. And really, he is carrying this show. But bringing in these characters that he has a past with and revealing more and more of his past, and you're really, as the show goes on, you're really getting more of the sense that, yes, he is a complete bastard. But he has to be, because if he isn't, the people who are close to him pay the price. And if he's a complete bastard, then people still pay the price, but he wasn't close to them to begin with. I mean, really, that's kind of the whole philosophy behind his character, is that, you know, if I don't let anyone get close to me and I don't get close to anyone else, it doesn't hurt so bad when they die a bloody horrible death.
That's the way I'm treating 12 monkeys. I'm not going to get close to it. So when it dies a horrible death, it won't make me feel bad.
Well, now what makes it, you say they're getting closer to the feel of the comic book. Are they bringing in anything from the comic book into the series? Any further characters, any further missions or whatever you would call them from him?
Well, like I said, it's been way too long since I read the comics for me to remember any specifics. I really do this. If anything else, this has really inspired me to want to go back and read those comics again, because I remember dearly loving them when I read them in college. And now it's all, you know, I'm getting bits and pieces of them coming back, more like feelings and senses of reading them rather than specifics. But it's starting to click in and starting to feel more authentic to me. So that's a good sign. But like, and they had a two-parter just like a couple of weeks ago that concluded, where an old flame of Constantine's comes back into his life. She was part of the exorcism that went wrong, and she too hates Constantine for what he's done. But he's the only one who can help her with this, you know, supernatural issue that she's having at this nunnery. But this relationship that you see between them, it actually is interesting, as opposed to most of the relationships that you see develop for, you know, one or two episodes with characters on screen. And they have some real chemistry. And I mean, the idea that after what happened between them went so wrong that she was driven to become a nun kind of says something. And there's some comments to that effect as well. But they have a very complex relationship. And at one point, they're trying to save some babies that are being taken by a demon. And at one point, she actually shoots him in order so that her and the baby can get away. And in order to survive, there's a demon on the way that's going to basically, you know, eat his head. And in order to save himself, he invites a demon into himself. So he gives up all the wards and enchantments that he has on himself that protects him. And the demon that he has inhabit him is none other than Pazuzu, who, if you're a fan of Exorcist, you'll remember that is the demon that possesses Reagan.
Okay, so a little nice little nod there. That's not bad. Well, no. I don't know. It wasn't a fact that I lost interest. It just didn't hold my interest. All right, I'll give it another shot.
Those early episodes, they were kind of sputtering start and stop. It just didn't really get their rhythm until at least a good four or five episodes in.
Yeah. See, now here's the thing. This, I think I've identified why, because I bailed on Constantine. I haven't kept up with The Flash. I said I would watch The Arrow, but I didn't stick with that. And there's so many shows that I'm moderately interested in. These are okay. But the way I watch TV there's been a seismic shift in the way I can watch my TV. I binge watch now. If you're only going to give me one show a week for weeks at a time, man, you're going to be hard-pressed to keep me watching.
Yeah.
So again, you're a lazy TV watcher, too.
Well, I am, but you know what? I'm also a very busy TV watcher.
Yeah. Well, I'm with the binge watching.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I mean, Eric knows what I'm talking about. You know, you're doing a show, you have a weeks at a time commitment.
Yeah.
You just can't commit to watching a show, you know, on a week-to-week basis. You're going to have to say, look, you know, give me a big chunk of these things. And, yeah, I would watch, like, four or five episodes and catch up. That's how I watch S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm really that's the one show that I actually do relatively keep up with. S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, I've been watching on an episode by episode basis, but it's really hard to stick with it because it's so tempting to just say, oh, it'll be out on disc in a couple months. That way I can watch them all then, or it'll be on Netflix soon. Network TV, the business model for network TV is antiquated and it needs to go because people don't watch things that way anymore.
And you shouldn't feel too guilty about watching binge watching TV because a lot of the writers are coming out and producers are coming out and saying that they prefer They like people to binge watch their shows because that's the best way to get them into it. Yeah. That's how I got into Breaking Bad. I didn't watch the first two or three. I think I missed the first two seasons. I think I got caught up about midway through the third season. But basically, I got copies of all the episodes and I watched like the entire first two and a half seasons in a period of 2 weeks. And
yeah.
That was the best way for me to get into that show. If I had, I would have still probably watched it if I'd started watching from the beginning, but it wouldn't have had the impact that it did watching episodes back to back as I wanted to watch them.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not just binge watching that it as a habit that has changed the way we watch TV. It's just that there are so many other things competing for our attention.
Yep.
You know, the internet, video games, books, comic books. There's so many things now that cater to our interests. I mean, we've talked before how what a great time it is to be a nerdy person because there are all these great things out there. But that's also the flip side of that. There are all these great things out there.
And only a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
You just don't have that amount of time. And so if you want me to be interested in what you're trying to sell me, you got to meet me on my terms. You're going to have to give it to me the way I want it. Well, otherwise, yeah. I'm just not going to stick with you.
Yeah, maybe it's good that I'm DVRing all these things and not able to watch them until like 15 episodes later.
I think so. I mean, that may be the only way to really, truly get into some of these things.
Well, and another thing about it is that, you know, a lot of the shows they're writing now, the long-term storyline has become a very popular TV series. And that's what makes binge watching really great is if you can watch these long-term storylines unfold right, you know, at a shorter interval, like Breaking Bad, like, even Walking Dead. I love binge watching that, even though I've seen the episodes. But
Sons of Anarchy is another one that people watch a lot of.
And
serialized storylines, that is all I watch. Yeah. I don't watch anything that is not a continuing storyline. To me, it's a total waste of time. That's why I don't watch sitcoms either.
Well, see, now I will say this, and one of my, I've been wanting to mention this, but there are a couple shows that I love, and they're very episodic. One of them, it's become a different story. It's become a storyline, but Persons of Interest, that TV series, that my wife made me watch that a couple times, and I'm hooked. And I've watched a couple episodes back to back, and they're telling a huge storyline now. It used to be kind of episodic, but Backstrom, we just talked about with the new Rainn Wilson TV show. It's very episodic, but it's captivating, and I'll watch that one week to week, I think, because it's very cool. It's a very different character for Rainn Wilson to be portraying. But there's very few episodic. Yeah, I'm with you guys. It's like I just don't see myself watching them.
Now, there are shows like we were just talking about, Fringe, and, you know, the first season of Fringe is completely episodic. There's really not that much through line that connects each of those episodes. But then in the second season, they really start to connect things.
Yeah.
And as the series goes on, it becomes more and more of a serialized story than it is episodic.
Yeah.
You still get the monster of the week thing, but there's always that through line that carries through from episode to episode. And I think, I don't want to say X-Files was the first to do that, but
that's just what I was going to say.
Yeah, X-Files was the first one I remember doing that, where they started off with the self-contained episodes, and then they gradually started to introduce a through line.
If not the first one, it's the first one to kind of get really close to that perfect balance of, okay, we've had enough week-to-week stories. Let's work on a mythology story. For this couple of weeks, you get an overarching story. You know, they balance that out where, you have the monster of the week stories, but there's also this overarching conspiracy mega story that the whole series is about. And to me, that's the really complicated part about these shows is... This is where, for me, Lost lost me. I mean, it was it just crawled so far up its own ass that I have no idea what the hell was going on in there eventually. And it just stopped caring.
They're all dead.
Have to find that balance of, okay, this week it's just going to be a one-off. You're going to have this monster. The guys will fight it. And then things will go back to the status quo. But next week, we're going to deal with these issues that are overarching and affecting the whole series.
Yeah, they had a good mix.
Yeah. And well, another perfect example of that is Twin Peaks. Sure.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, at the time when it came out, you didn't have much choice. You couldn't, there were VCRs, sure, but you couldn't DVR, you couldn't, you know, stream, you couldn't do stuff like that. So you were forced to watch it that way. But the nice thing about it was it was all one big story. And you could, the next day, you could talk to people like in the office or in the green room or wherever and say, did you see last night's episode? That was so cool. Can't wait for the next one. Well, I got all the series on DVD and I watched them all in a row and I'm like, I kind of miss the camaraderie of talking to people at the water cooler the next day about the episode. So it's like, it's a give and take, but I love the whole storyline. Even whether you can binge watch or not, just knowing that you got another continuing story coming up is still good.
There's been articles written about the death of the water cooler conversation as far as television goes, because DVRs and Netflix and, you know,
a lot of people say, no spoilers, no spoilers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
everyone
but you know what?
On their own schedule.
The water cooler has moved online. I mean, you can find, if you wanted to, I guarantee you right now, we could all go online and find a forum where we can discuss Twin Peaks ad nauseum
until
we're all, you know, and we can talk about it episode by episode and really break it down. So I think those conversations can still be had. They're just being had other places than your office.
Yeah, true. Good point.
Right.
Good point.
But the problem comes with stuff that's fairly new. And
you
know, with the spoiler etiquette, how long do you wait before you start talking about plot points in a public forum? And, you know, and I'm on the fence on that one. I'm like, I think that probably 1 to 2 weeks after something has aired is more than enough time.
Yeah.
If someone hasn't gotten caught up at that point, then they need to exit the forum until they do.
Well, we've gotten to that argument here on the podcast. It's like, well, how many spoilers are we getting into in this one, you know? And
But that goes back to the way we consume our media. I mean, for me, when we were talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a while back and I wasn't quite caught up, I appreciated the fact that we didn't spoil anything because I was 3 episodes behind. Now, granted, I watched those 3 episodes, one right after another, and I was quickly caught back up. But like I said, people don't consume media the way they used to. So that's why the spoilers have become such a big deal now. Is because people are waiting until they can binge watch the whole thing.
But I think with, like, as far as what we do here, a podcast, as long as if you're going to talk about a spoiler, as long as you say, okay, this is a spoiler, so people have a chance to hit the pause or the fast forward button or whatever, I think that that's fair.
Yeah, I agree.
Besides and that, if it's our podcast, we can do what we want.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys.
Everyone knows Rosebud was a sled, so it's fine.
Man.
Thanks a lot. I was just going to watch Citizen Kane next week.
Oh, that's this weekend in Peoria. Oh, man. I so badly still want to go to that.
Now you don't have to go.
I wish I could. 3.5 hours. Yeah, that's right. Now I don't have to go. Tim spoiled it for me. Now, we do
You're welcome.
To leave the show because, hey, our time is up. And it's, you know, anybody binge watching or binge listening to the podcast, they'll already have next week's show ready to go. But that'd be weird time travel right there. But anyway, we need to end the show. But before we do, I've got to mention something extremely important. Sure, Tim, you're in the Odd Couple. Big deal. My son is the Wizard. He just got cast as Professor Marvel, the Wizard, in The Wizard of Oz in the 8th grade production. By the way, if you guys want to come down for the show, May 15th at 7 p.m., May 17th at 2 p.m. at the Robinson High School Cafetorium. I love that name. I love that name. It's the auditorium cafetorium and cafeteria mix, so cafetorium. You can eat. It's like a dinner theater, actually. That's what they should call it, the Robinson High School Dinner Theater. Anyway, May 15th and 17th, you want to see my son play the Wizard. You got
Please tell me they're going to project his head, like, huge up on a screen.
I'm hoping
that would be awesome. That would be great.
If they don't, I'm going to offer my services as a video person and saying, hey, I can help you with this. We need a big head.
Need to make that happen, you know, make it happen.
Well, Isaac's head's already pretty big, so.
Well, yeah.
Oh, did you hear that comeback? He said, where do you think I get it from? So anyway, but I'm very proud of him in that. So I had to put that out. So
congratulations.
Yeah. So if you guys,
that's excellent.
So around mid-May, if you guys are around the town area, well, we can all hit the theater. And the cool thing is, all his friends got cast as in Tin Man and all those other parts. I don't remember all the other parts. I just remember there's a wizard. But anyway, so we do have to call an end to this podcast. So that we can, I can get it edited and put up on time for people to listen to, and B, because it's late. It's almost past
That's
my
right.
bedtime. I got to take my...
Geritol?
Geritol, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta
do your
take my Geritol
hair club for men thing. And
yeah. Take my Geritol, strap on my Depends, and I'm good to go. So that's it for this week's Nerd Up podcast. Guys, it turned out to be a good one, and we only had 3 TV shows to talk about. Amazing.
Yep.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm Gil T. Wilson. If you want to get a hold of me, you can tweet me at Gil Wilson, or again, for the Nerd Up podcast in general, at Nerd Up Podcast. Don't forget our website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Shop Amazon, shop iTunes, buy our t-shirts. Heck, if you just want to donate us money, like, what, $3.99 for a comic book? Yeah, donate $3.99 to the podcast for an issue of the comic book, if you want to. I'm not begging for money. So anyway, that's how you get a hold of me. Eric?
I'm at Eric Bill on Twitter.
And I'm Tim, and you can find me at Tim Gone Mad.
Well, that's it for the podcast. So join us again next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but it's going to be just as much fun as we had tonight. So once again, thank you guys for joining. And hey, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.